Welcome to American Dreamland, a place where inequality thrives and cash controls the nation. The state of our country may seem hopeless, but I'm here to tell you the dream's not dead. Hello everyone, I'm DJ Scarlett, and on this episode of American Dreamland, I'll be talking about feminism. What it is, what it isn't, why we need it, and what we can do to address the systemic misogyny and patriarchy in our society. Something that really bothers me is that no one really knows the definition of feminism, and therefore a lot of people who are technically feminists don't actually identify as such. I can't count how many times I've heard someone say, "I'm not a feminist, but," and go on to say something a feminist would say. The reason why a lot of people hesitate to identify as feminists is due to the misinterpretation of the word and how it is often used to describe someone who either hates men or thinks that the world owes them something in some way. However, this couldn't be further from the truth, because the actual definition of feminism is just someone who believes that men and women should be equal. Feminists don't want to rise above men or even bring men down to their status in society. It's called feminism because we're not striving for some sort of medium between men and women's rights, but we are looking to lift women up to the status given to men in our culture. I'd also like to focus on the real definition of feminism in terms of including all women. There's a really nasty trend going around of people who identify as feminists, but only focus on the issues of women who are white, cis, able-bodied, and straight. This leaves a huge majority of women's issues out, and claiming that all women go through the same struggles is ridiculous, because a black woman will have much different struggles than a woman who is white, while a transgender woman will face different obstacles than someone who is cisgender. This toxic trend is called white feminism, and just to be clear, being white doesn't automatically make you one. A white feminist is someone who focuses on the issues of privileged women while ignoring the struggles of others. It's called white feminism because the main trend has been white women excluding women of color from the narrative, but it can also include a disregard for women who are LGBTQ, disabled, or economically disadvantaged. Something white feminists are known to do is play the femininity card, where they'll support a woman just because she's female. To be clear, feminism isn't about unquestioningly supporting every woman, especially if that woman takes part in racism, homophobia, classism, or any number of awful things. Supporting a politician or public figure just because she's a woman is ridiculous, and it's not what feminism is about. Although feminists do strive for solidarity and are attempting to put women in politics, just being a woman doesn't automatically mean she isn't discriminatory to other groups or acting on internalized misogyny. The reason why these white feminists aren't actually feminists is because their point of view doesn't fit the definition of feminism, that all women should be equal to all men. If you're just focusing on a small number of privileged women, you're not supporting equality and therefore aren't feminist. The same thing goes for women who identify as such but believe that men are inferior. They aren't real feminists because they are again not supporting equality but an unequal power dynamic. Besides feminists not hating men, feminism is actually really helpful when addressing struggles men face when living in a patriarchal society. Feminism isn't about attacking men or women versus men or anything like that. It's about tackling an oppressive system that perpetrates sexism, as well as racism, classism, and imperialism. Some ways feminism helps men is by tackling the traditional gender roles and recognizing ways in which hypermasculinity is toxic to both men and women. And when I talk about hypermasculinity or toxic masculinity, what I'm referring to is the part of our culture that enforces strict gender norms like power, anger, aggressiveness, dominance, and lack of emotion onto men. Although there are many positive attributes to masculinity, and some of these traits are valuable when in the right setting, the way society enforces these norms on men causes problems for everyone. If a man doesn't live up to the hyper-masculine and often unattainable image, he is often deemed as feminine and inherently less than. Often men are swept up in the cycle of toxic masculinity, and not only did this hurt women, but men who are afraid of showing their real selves or any emotions are a danger to themselves. According to recent studies by Princeton economists, the single greatest risk factor for suicide in the United States is being a white male. And the reason is because of hegemonic masculinity. Not only are men forced to live up to this masculine ideal that is always just out of reach, but they must put on this facade to hide their emotions and possible mental health issues. Because of toxic masculinity, men aren't meant to cry, be vulnerable, or discuss their emotions, and this repression is proven by numerous studies to have severe and detrimental effects on men's health. Now that I've talked about what feminism is, what it's not, and how real feminism helps everyone, I'm going to address another common misconception, which is the idea that we don't need feminism in the modern-day United States. Many people claim that since women have the right to vote, and because there are laws in place declaring equality, then sexism must be dead, and feminists are just self-righteous and entitled women who want to oppress men. Many of these people are either women who haven't critically examined their internalized misogyny, or men who don't see the need for feminism because their privilege in society leads to blindness about these issues. The fact is, sexism is not only a part of our culture, but it's a systemic issue that affects women through politics as well as in everyday interactions. Misogyny, like racism, is systemic and has deep historical roots. It is incredibly important to examine history when looking at modern-day social issues, so we can see in what ways our government continues to perpetrate patriarchy. Looking back in history, we see that women did not have the right to vote until quite recently, and marital rape wasn't even considered a crime until the 1970s. Today, we still see women struggling to protect their reproductive rights, close the wage gender gap, and persecute sexual offenders for their crimes. Expanding on how sexism is perpetrated by our system and government, I wanted to touch on the issue of women's reproductive rights. Women are still fighting the government for things like autonomy over their body, birth control, reproductive health care, and affordable feminine hygiene products. It's insane that our government, a majority of which are wealthy, white, Christian men, will pass laws that take away women's bodily autonomy, but refuse to pass tougher gun restrictions because banning something never really works and they don't want to infringe on people's rights. What's more is they pass these laws with the excuse of protecting a fetus, but as soon as that child is born, there is hardly any government support or affordable health care to keep them healthy. Meanwhile, children are living in extreme poverty, being shot in their classrooms, and dying due to U.S. involvement in the Middle East, and these same politicians who claim they are pro-life are silent. When you examine their argument against women's reproductive rights and compare it to other values and policies they have, you see the hypocrisy, and it's evident the only time these politicians care about protecting children are when they are inside of a woman. When programs like Planned Parenthood are defunded or targeted by the government, women are not able to have access to things like healthcare, birth control, STI testing, and abortion. This also has a greater effect on women who don't have enough time, money, or support to access these things through other facilities. One of the main arguments against places like Planned Parenthood is against abortion, which I'll address in a second, but what many people fail to realize is that most women use Planned Parenthood for their health. There are many instances where women require help with sexually transmitted diseases or hormonal issues they can't afford anywhere else. Tons of women use birth control for medical issues and could be incredibly sick or broke if it was not offered at a low price at Planned Parenthood. Despite these facts, even if a woman wants birth control just because she wants to have sex without getting pregnant, that is her right, and absolutely no one else's business, including the government. Getting back to the issue of abortion, it's crucial we allow women to make decisions about their own body without government interference. Having an abortion is not an easy or fun thing to do. A woman will only have one if she believes it is the best option for her or the fetus. Whether that's because she is too young, financially unstable, in an abusive relationship, for health reasons, because she was raped, or really any other reason, it is her right to choose and is an important decision that will impact her life greatly. There is also substantial evidence from numerous studies across the world proving the fetus is not able to feel any sort of pain until at least 29 to 30 weeks gestation. Women are also discriminated against economically. Not only are women forced to pay a luxury tax for tampons while Viagra is covered by health insurance, but often women's products are not only more expensive than men's, but also lower quality. The next time you go to a store, check out the disparity between the men's and women's products. Not only is the marketing for women often patronizing and stereotypical, but you will find lower quality products for higher prices when compared to those items marketed towards men. However, this is just the tip of the iceberg, because economic discrimination against women goes far deeper than products on a shelf. One of the biggest issues is the gender wage gap. something that has received a huge amount of criticism from those who don't understand what it is and how things like history, culture, and politics play into it. Before I explain what the wage gap is and why it is real, I'm going to provide you with some stats. There's a chance you've heard that women earn about 80 cents for every dollar a man does, but what you might not realize is this is just looking at a white demographic. Black women make about 65 cents for every dollar a white man earns, and Latinas make only about 58. These facts are really important to not overlook because intersectionality is an integral part of feminism. If we focus only on statistics about whites, we're leaving out a huge demographic, and feminism without intersectionality is just white supremacy. Even when confronted with these statistics, many people believe that the wage gap still doesn't exist, or if it does, it is only because women are either too lazy to make the same as men or tend to work jobs that are lower pay and status. This is where things get a bit complicated, because although the jobs women work does feed into the gender pay gap, it is not because women are not as accomplished or goal-oriented as men. When looking at this issue, we need to understand that misogyny is systemic, historically enacted, and culturally constructed. Women grew up in a culture that forces misogyny and hegemonic patriarchy down their throats since before they can speak. It is unquestioned by many people in our culture that women are only good for certain jobs, and those careers labeled as feminine are often underpaid, undervalued, or looked down upon by society. So that is an aspect of the wage gap. However, there is also the fact that being a woman is tougher both socially and economically than being a man. And many women don't have the support network they need in order to attain high status or a good paying job. According to AmericanProgress.org, women's choice of occupations are not only influenced by our culture, but many women have to leave their job to provide unpaid childcare or look after their family. The site goes on to say that despite these factors, a huge portion of the gender pay gap is unaccounted for by choice of occupation or environmental factors, meaning that women with the same educational background, experience, and skills as men doing the same jobs are being paid lower wages based on not only gender, but their race or ethnicity. The fact is, the gender wage gap is not a myth. And although there are a number of cultural and historical factors that influence this, there's also the simple fact that women are sometimes paid less for the same jobs. There's also the issue of how violence against women is treated in our legal system. Not only is violence against women a huge issue, but the treatment of those who come forward after being physically or sexually assaulted can be astonishingly cruel. According to the Department of Justice and the CDC, an estimated 300,000 to 1.3 million women are raped in the United States each year. Women also have about a 1 in 5 chance of being raped, and that goes to 1 in 4 when they're in college. It is estimated that only 54% of rapes are reported, and often those reports are minimized, questioned, or not taken seriously. There's often victim blaming, as well as accusing the victim of asking for it or overreacting and ruining the rapist's life by reporting the assault. What's more, is in 31 states, a rapist can sue his victim for visitation and custody rights if a child is conceived by rape. And in the case of the Stanford rapist, where Brock Turner was found assaulting an unconscious woman behind a dumpster, he was sentenced to only 6 months in prison and served 3. Not only is sexual violence a huge issue, but women also have an estimated 1 in 4 chance of experiencing severe partner violence in their lifetime. Women face up to 85% of intimate partner abuse, and since 2003, 18,000 women have been killed by a romantic partner or ex-partner, with an estimated 3 women dying from the hands of a romantic partner a day. To give you an idea of how serious intimate partner violence is, between 2001 and 2012, 6,488 troops were killed in Afghanistan and Iraq. During that same time period, 11,766 women were murdered by a husband, boyfriend, or ex. Violence against women has been an epidemic in our society. But why exactly does this happen? Why is violence against women so normalized? Again, we have to examine the influence of history as well as cultural norms like hypermasculinity. Oftentimes, an unhealthy idea of masculinity is associated with asserting power over other groups in society, treating women like property, and embodying violent tendencies. But it's not just extreme misogynists and abusers that perpetrate violence against women. Everyday actions and assumptions we make called microaggressions lead to something called rape culture, which is when a society or environment has normalized and trivialized sexual abuse. When thinking about how small actions lead to a larger culture complacent with sexual assault, imagine a pyramid divided from top to bottom into four horizontal sections. The bottom row is a normalization of rape and includes things like sexist attitudes, victim blaming, and rape jokes. On top of that is degradation, which encompasses things like stalking, catcalling, non-consensual pictures, or revenge porn. Next, there's removal of autonomy, which includes groping, coercion, dosing, and finally at the top of the pyramid is rape, murder, and sexual violence. All of these things build on one another to allow a culture in which rape is so pervasive. And it is up to us as a society, and men in particular, to stop contributing to rape culture by not participating yourself and calling out others, whether they be your friends, acquaintances, or strangers. On top of being aware of these issues and how your actions may contribute to an unequal and dangerous society, there are political actions people are taking, like attempting to enact the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would prohibit gender-based pay discrepancies and ban workplace policies that penalize employees for sharing wage information. However, despite being introduced in every Congress since 1997, it has not yet been passed. Other than working on getting bills like this through Congress, we need to focus our attention on the objectification and degradation of women in the media and advertising, as well as electing politicians who are respectful of women, or at least don't brag about sexually assaulting them. Education, as well as representation of women in positions of power, are very important in the fight for gender equality. Not only do we need to teach women and girls to question hegemonic masculinity and not accept sexist attitudes, but we can also take steps to ensure our education system teaches children about discrimination, gender, and consent. Including women in the narrative when making global decisions is also crucial, and electing more women into positions of power and influence will lead to the inclusion of women in policymaking. However, these things can only be done if we as a society educate ourselves on these issues and adjust our beliefs and ultimately our cultural values accordingly. Thanks again for tuning in to American Dreamland. Tune in next week when I discuss white privilege, systemic racism, white supremacy, and the fact that it is impossible to be racist towards white people. Have a great week, and remember, the dream's not dead. I'm DJ Scarlett, signing off.